Good morning. This is Talking Animals. My guest today is Becky Robinson, co-founder and president of Alley Cat Allies, which bills itself the only national advocacy organization dedicated to the protection and humane treatment of cats. My conversation with her in a few moments. Also is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. We'll give away one of the awesome new Talking Animals t-shirts. But let's get it started right now with an animal tune of sorts from J.D. McPherson. This is Firebug here on Talking Animals. That was J.D. McPherson with Firebug. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. And my guest today, Becky Robinson, co-founder and president of Alley Cat Allies, a national advocacy organization based in Bethesda, Maryland, that seeks to end the killing of cats and lead the movement for their humane care. So in an interview recorded last Wednesday, this is Becky Robinson on Talking Animals. Good morning, Becky.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm really great, and thank you so much for joining us on
Thanks for having me.
Talking Animals. Absolutely. So let's start at the beginning. Well, you know, sort of. I mean, you founded Alley Cat Allies 23 years ago, and maybe you could talk about the factors that prompted you to start the organization, which was singular then and now, really. So what was sort of the chief impetus?
Well, the evening that I went out and discovered a feral cat colony in Washington, D.C., was not my intentions, other than to just have a nice evening out and have dinner and enjoy a summer in the district. And what happened very quickly is that several of us, after seeing this colony that I pointed out, and that's what feral cats live in, is colonies, they're mm-hmm. family groups,
yeah.
And they were beautiful, black and white tuxedo cats, and they were being cared for by the residents. I didn't live in that neighborhood. And we called the shelter for help, because that's what you do when you
sure.
find animals that you think are homeless. Well, I quickly figured out, it didn't take me long to realize, these cats are not homeless. They have a home, and they have people caring for them. And they're not pets. They're not animals that can be brought inside. Now, they were having baby kittens. They were having litters twice a year. And the residents, the neighbors, would bring in the small babies. And they ended up adopting them to their family and friends, but they couldn't touch the adults. And the shelter told us that if we could catch them with a box trap to bring them in, but that all they would do, they wouldn't place them for adoption. They couldn't. They couldn't be touched, is that they would euthanize them. Well, we all know that euthanize is just a euphemism, if you will, for for killing, because they're healthy animals. They're, you know, the term euthanize means that if it's a sick, suffering, injured animal that's can't be helped, that they would be mercifully euthanized.
Sure.
So that really was the beginning, is that right after we realized that we were on our own, and, you know, everybody knows DIY today, do
right.
it yourself.
Sure.
There's even a website, I think. Well, we quickly learned 23 years ago that we were on our own and that we had to figure this out. But the interesting thing was, is that Cat Fancy magazine had published an article by Ellen Perry Berkley, and it was about a woman in New York City, Annabelle Washburn. And she had discovered trapnidic release through the United Kingdom and through some experts there that had been carrying out this practice now that we have in the United States now for the last two decades, that's really very simple. It's just common sense. It's practical. Is that if instead of removing the cats and taking them to shelters, which is still practiced in the majority of areas in this country, in the United States, sadly,
sure.
you know, the trapnidic release, and often, you know, whether it's trapnidic release or trapnidic return, the cats are humanely through a box trap. If anybody wants to see one, they can go to our website, alleycat.org, and they're transported to veterinarians. And these veterinarians obviously anesthetize them in the trap. So they perform the surgery, the spay for females and the neuter for males, and the cats are vaccinated, and then they're ear-tipped while they're under anesthesia. It's just simply a very small tip of their left ear, or right in some cases, but predominantly their left ear is surgically removed and then, you know, cauterized. It's all fine. It heals on its own then, and the cats wake up, they recover from the surgery, and they're returned to the original place where they were trapped.
Right. So I want to definitely get into more of that and some of the issues that go with that. But just to mess around or steer things a little bit on the space-time continuum, I'd still like to go back a little bit more to that fateful evening, because among the things I've learned over the years of doing the show is that sometimes the most effective leaders and advocates in the realm of animal welfare kind of, you know, initially wandered into that work, you know, accidentally, like sort of, I call them the accidental activists. So maybe, because it sounds like that just was one of those sort of things, like you were out that night, you saw these cats, you called, you found an answer that didn't seem very satisfactory. I mean, what were you kind of doing, you know, at that point otherwise, and why did that hit you so powerfully that you said, you know what, whatever I'm doing now, I'm going to sort of see if we can't address this cat situation?
Yeah, well, for me, on one hand, you're absolutely right. That term applies to me on one hand, an accidental activist. But on the other hand, my family, I was raised in the Midwest, and we were involved with animals, wildlife, and domestic dogs and cats. And in fact, my family started the first Humane Society in Central Kansas when I was a teenager.
Wow.
So I'd been around what it meant to care for animals, and not simply rescue and rehome, but for wildlife, we were environmentalists, and we you know, we had a wildlife rehab program, you know, an informal one.
Yeah.
And that meant that whatever animal we could help with the assistance of veterinarians that would assist us, they stayed at our place caged. It was a fox or a snake or a squirrel, whatever it would have been. And we were very big proponents of protecting all animals.
Okay.
And understanding them. You know, the big thing was is that people are, you know, what happens with people is that when I was growing up is that I was taught what these animals were, their behaviors and their natural environment,
mm-hmm.
and how you just leave them alone. I mean, they're fine. They live amongst us, and they're not a threat to us. They're not a danger, no matter what animal it is. And obviously, we were taught proper handling techniques with wildlife, and so that helped me with the feral cats. So,
yeah.
You know, I didn't know. I didn't really think about the one thing about feral cats. Again, the term feral meaning They're the same as a domestic cat. They're all domestic cats that you see, whether they're indoors or outdoors, they're the same species.
Mm-hmm.
But the feral cats can't be touched, so you have to you know, safely, humanely box trap them. So all of this upbringing in my training led me to understand what these cats need a different kind of care. They're not going to be placed in homes. They're not going to be a lap cat.
Right. So it sounds like, Becky, if I follow you, you not only had a bit of a sort of genetic / family predisposition to help animals in need, but you had, you know, you came to that in addition with an understanding of animals that, you know, that weren't just a nice house cat sitting on the bed. And that they might, you know, that they might need, you know, something more and maybe something that you kind of knew how to do from how you grew up and what you saw.
Yeah, it was common. I mean, one of the activities is growing up was it was very common. I mean, any place you live, anywhere you go in the United States, there are cats. But everybody knows in the Midwest and most parts of the country, there are alley cats, there are barn cats. And
mm-hmm.
so in central Kansas, there were farmers and they had cats. And
yeah.
We helped them. I mean, the goal here is what we didn't have, you know, that what prompted Alley Cat Allies to form, what prompted us to form the programs for Alley Cat Allies was the need for not only understanding these cats, but how to help them. And there was not the spay-neuter resources. Spay-neuter was hard to come by.
Sure.
Most veterinarians were not even trained on how to spay or neuter,
mm-hmm.
except for maybe, you know, in school, one or two cats. And so, you know, this was building, you know, the beginning was identifying the need and building the resources and the educational program. So, you know, I would say that the other piece of this is that, you know, what I got out of, fortunately, my upbringing and my family was the understanding animals, understanding
mm-hmm.
domestic cats and understanding wildlife and understanding the environment was also organizing. Because people do want to help animals, but they may not have that training. So that is one thing that I was also schooled in. You know, I've been trained. So that was why Alley Cat Allies also got off the ground, is because I was a grassroots organizer.
Well,
and
also,
I knew what that meant, and I knew how to do it.
Right, and really, and I think beyond that, if I'm not mistaken, too, you hold a master's in public administration, I think, and. Because to me, what's not to get too sidetracked by this, but I just think it's so important because, again, people on the air and behind the scenes talk to me about this all the time about, you know, organizations that, of course, always have the best of intentions. But if they don't have people like you that have that kind of skill and background, you know, that it's always an uphill battle because, you know, you've got animals, you've got costs, you've got, you know, medical issues, you've got so many things. And a lot of times people, you know, back to my accidental activist thing, you get people who, again, come in with only just trying to help, but the next thing you know, they're overwhelmed and don't have a structure or a leadership bent or much less training or academic or otherwise. And then, you know, they find themselves always up against it financially and otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that a lot of people in this country have organized and they have learned what it takes. And, you know, there are all kinds of different animal organizations and they're all formed because whoever formed them, you know, there's an individual or a group of people, and always nonprofits have a board. So we're a 501c3 group and we quickly organized to see that we had a mission. And it's not easy. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of thankless hours running a nonprofit business when it is a business, to your point.
Yeah.
And what I can say is that it's very rewarding. I mean, it quickly became apparent to me that out of all the things I've been doing in my life, that this was the one that was fulfilling and that I could, that I had a really much stronger passion for than anything else. And so, you know, there are a lot of people that are running these organizations now, and it has grown. I mean, Trap Neuter Return now has hundreds of groups that have registered with the IRS. You know, they're legitimate charitable organizations with their mission to help feral cats and to carry out Trap Neuter Return.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of them obviously struggle. They may not have fundraising skills, but now in this day and age, there are webinars, there's online information. There's a lot more free and inexpensive ways to learn how to run a nonprofit and to carry out exactly what needs to happen to fill the needs.
Sure. Sure. Well, and the other thing that I think corresponds to that is that sort of, you know, backed by an imaginary drum roll, I kind of now would like to ask the big question, or one of them, that, you know, why now are feral cats so controversial? And the corollary, of course, would be, you know, why is TNR so controversial? Was it? You know, is that something that there was sort of a sea change in that way, as you say, that back then, I mean, people, you know, just didn't really understand TNR, especially when you had that you know, fateful outing 23 years ago. There wasn't really any response that the shelter had to it, and luckily there was, you know, the Cat Fancy article that someone was already doing this in the UK. But something that comes up on the show a lot is just how emotionally charged the whole issue swirling around feral cats and TNR is. Can you sort of address that a little bit?
Well, yeah. Let me first touch on the fact that our organization, you know, it's made up of all kinds of people, and as you said, you know, running a nonprofit and carrying out what the mission should be for anyone starting a group, you have to find all the people with the skills. So it's not just me here, and mm-hmm. we've, of course, grown in the last two decades,
sure.
which is indicative of this movement to the point where there was such a need that people have filled this need, and they've created these programs, because these were cats that were just not being met by the system. They were not being met by what we had in place 20 years ago. And what we have in place in this country are shelters, and there were more and more shelters that were being developed, and a lot more adoption programs. And thankfully, not only spay-neuter and low-cost spay-neuter, but high-volume spay-neuter. So all of these things kind of, you know, it was like the stars were aligned. And so these animals who have been for 100 years that outdoor cats have been rounded up and removed.
Mm-hmm.
And not I think the controversy, as you say, if there is controversy, is not that this threatened return is controversial, because it's humane. And in fact, we've polled the public. We had a national poll Harris conducted for us, and the public was asked, the survey asked, if you see a cat outside, what do you think is the most humane option, to leave the cat where it is or to take him in to a shelter where he'll be put down, where he'll be killed? And 81% said leave him where he is. So we have a public that was unaware that there's a systematic, entrenched system here through our animal control and through contracted animal control, which is private shelters have contracts often.
Mm-hmm.
501c3s often have a city or municipal agreement that they get paid to carry out the removal of cats from their city, from their town. And so that wasn't widely known.
Yeah.
It wasn't widely publicized. In fact, it was it's been done behind the scenes. It still is. And that's what is the wake-up call. Everybody that started realizing they were caring for these cats and they were calling for help to the institutions that we all have in all of our communities, and they weren't getting what they wanted, and they had to create this. And it took a while to create this from scratch, to create a spay-neuter clinic and to create trap depots where you have dozens of humane box traps for loan to caregivers, and to really organize this. But groups have. And they've done this, and now it's apparent, it's clear that this is not only what people want and what they're doing and what they're organized to do. Very, you know, educated people, very organized, have created these incredible model programs, state of the art, and in fact, it's successful.
Yeah.
The trap and return in places has brought an entire colonies down to zero. So I think that what happens is that there's this misunderstanding of what this is, and there's a misunderstanding also that this practice that we've had in place for 100 years of removing cats and taking them to shelters and impounding them and killing them doesn't work. It's failed, and we now know that it's failed, and we can't hang on to something that's it's archaic. We're not going, you know, I don't think the public feels that that's responsible. And it's, of course, it's a waste of lives, and it's a waste of taxpayers' dollars on top of that.
All right. Well, let me first let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, I'm speaking with Becky Robinson, president and co-founder of Alley Cat Allies, and a conversation recorded last Wednesday. So, Becky, let me just sort of adopt the persona of a devil's advocate for a moment, just in terms of some of the things that you just said. First of all, backing up a bit to the national poll that you commissioned, and the question that you gave as an example, if you see a cat outside, what would you want the outcome to be? Was the one choice about being taken in that was it guaranteed that the cat would be killed? Was that part of the scenario that was that poll question?
Yes, and. You know, the local, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, local governments that have started to look at this, those that carry out that policy and practice,
mm-hmm.
Alley Cat Allies has just finished research that we'll be publishing this month that demonstrates that those municipalities that have stopped and examined and looked at what they can do better and differently and more effectively and more efficiently with the money, it are people that are within animal control that have decided trap, neuter, return is their choice. And we have found through our research that more than 330 local governments now incorporate trap, neuter, return into their formal animal control agency practices and policies.
Okay, well, no, I think that's, you know, that's notable and sort of hard to ignore. I'm just going to, for the purpose of discussion, going to stay in my devil's advocate mode for another moment or two, if that's okay. So let's say that I am a, let's say first that I'm a wildlife advocate, and I say, you know, this sort of growing population of feral cats is you know, posing a huge threat to wild birds. I love cats, but I also really love birds. And so I'm just not comfortable with cats being out there where they can do what they do to birds and, you know, whatever other critters. But so what, you know, how would you respond to me in that guise?
Well, first of all, my response is that, Duncan, you and I have a lot in common. Because I'm a wildlife enthusiast as well. I'm a birder, and I care about the environment and all the species that live around us and with us in our environment. And, you know, sadly, it's us. I mean, the first thing we need to do is recognize that our activities, you know, humans for now in this country and all over the world, of course, have carried out habitat loss. We've destroyed environments. Of course, there's a great deal of pesticide. There's pollution. There's a great deal of activities that experts in this field that have researched and reported on this have indicated it's our activities and our overtaking of the country and their homes, the wildlife homes, that are the issue. And when it comes to cats, they're not the threat. The cats have been living with us. They're not only been living with us, the domestic cat has been around for thousands of years, but ever since we've settled this country, they've been here. And we have to look at what's effective. And for that question that you're posing to me,
mm-hmm.
if you care about wildlife and you care about what's happening to them, we have to look at what we're going to do to make a difference. And we know now, after 100 years, that removing cats and killing them by the millions of cats are removed every single year. And that means probably hundreds of millions have been removed from our environment in the last 100 years. And we have to look at the fact that that doesn't work. It's failed. So doing more of the same, I think it was Einstein that said, doing more of the same and expecting a different result is essentially the definition of insanity. So
yeah.
we don't want more of the same. We want solutions. We want real, common sense, effective solutions that are going to work. And that's why we have to look at stopping the breeding. We have to look at not only trap, neuter, return, but we have to look at spay-neuter services that are available to, and accessible to the public at low cost or even free for
yeah.
their own animals.
And let's say I'm still this guy that you know I'm having this discussion with you. So let's say that as that guy, I'm then in light of what you've said, say okay. Well, what about this? You know, this study, the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute and the Fish and Wildlife Service study, and the results that they found, I mean, how does that square, let's say, with what you are indicating about the effect of outdoor cats on, you know?
So you mean the recent research?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a big thing that we have to keep in mind. One is when you hear these, when the public sees in the newspaper, the media loves flashy headlines. They love drama and controversy. But in that case, the media, the reporters, did not do their due diligence. And there was a study out a couple months ago, and we asked an independent researcher to examine it, who doesn't have any involvement with animal issues, wildlife issues, nothing. He doesn't even own an animal, and he's not an environmentalist per se. He just looked at this research and found that they're drawing their conclusions from studies that were researched not only decades old, but they were not even accounting for variations, for example, like in season or geography, or you know, the whole scope of what was out there for the wildlife. And you know what this researcher found is that there were major flaws, and that in his experience, he's a PhD, that this article is unacceptable even for publication, the fact that it even went through and was published. So I think that we have to look at that the other piece of this, that speaking to those that are thinking, yeah, but what about is going out, what is going on out there?
Mm-hmm.
When you hear these big numbers, you have to question them. If these were true of whatever numbers were thrown around, and you know, billions of birds,
right?
You have to think there'd be no birds left. You have to think about how logical this is, and basically, it's illogical.
Right. The numbers were so staggering, but you know, again,
so staggering, and they were out of line. And again, I think we have to look at one other aspect of this research, and those that are pushing for an agenda that's a very very defined agenda that they have. Their agenda, those that think they should stop TNR, is that they want, really what they're calling for is the continued mass killing of cats. And that means that's the system that we have in place in most of the United States, with the exception of now this direction that we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
These hundreds of local governments now, cities and towns and counties, are looking at this and have decided that they're not going to continue to do what's ineffective. And they've changed.
Yeah.
And that is the trend. And so to call for the mass killing, first of all, ethically, those of us that are wildlife, environmentalists, and animal lovers, we have to think about what the repercussions of that are. Because just simply saying that you take outdoor cats wherever they are, as many as you can get, in this mass removal, means that it will be mass killing. Going to a shelter for these cats is a death sentence. They're not going to be adopted.
Yeah.
And so we have to kind of look at what's behind this research and what really the intentions are of it that are unethical. And again, back to what I think Americans are, I think we all know. I think, you know, as a society, we love animals. We love all animals, whether we have a cat in our home or a dog in our home, or whether we're birders or not. We want humane approaches and humane solutions. And that's what Alley Cat Allies is proposing. That's what we're offering. And these governments, many of them, Alley Cat Allies has helped them and guided them to this process, a very thoughtful process, and they've gotten it right. And that's what we need to do in this country, is forge community change and get it right for the animals.
Well, okay, so I mean, of course, in my other guise, when I'm not being devil's advocate guy, of course, I agree. And in fact, we have a former feral, you know, living in our home, and you know, that's my Facebook page with a tipped ear and the whole thing. So, but I'm still gonna, just for one moment, just because part of the reason I do think, and this comes up all the time, including, you know, a show that we did earlier today live, where I've taken a bunch of just sort of random calls, and it does seem in certain areas maybe more than others, it's just so divisive. And it's just emotionally charged. So and part of the reason I guess I'm sort of coming at this interview in my devil's advocate guys is because I do want to you know, air the, you know, the various viewpoints, so that it's, and so I'm just going to take one more stab at a new devil's advocate guys, just so maybe you could respond to that as well, and then I'll return to my normal personality and this B movie might be over. But so Now, one of the things I found interesting about this is, as this, you know, in recent years, and some of these, again, communities, including Hillsborough County, where I'm talking to you from, is that veterinarians, in some cases, are vocal opponents to TNR. And so, you know, and I think you probably be more conversant than anyone, really, with some of the issues that they would cite. But, you know, I think those include that, you know, there's not really a chance in making the significant reductions in outdoor cat population, and they're recycling cats, and there's, you know, cats are a host for parasites, and they can spread rabies and stuff. So I guess maybe you could just respond to me now as devil's advocate veterinarian guy.
Yeah, well, there are people who are scared of, they hear things, and again, this is back to what you hear and what's reality, and usually they're two different things when you read the paper.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of concern about doing the right thing for animals, and also protecting public health, protecting our communities at the same time. And, you know, what Trap, Neuter, Return does is it does both, because these cats, there's research that shows that feral cats that have gone into these clinics and been tested and been examined, that they're 99, I mean, it was like 0.01112, whatever it was, out of a study of more than 100,000 feral cats were very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not, they're not only very healthy, they're doing quite well out there. And what they need is to be neutered so the breeding stops and vaccinated. And
yeah,
that's exactly what these high-volume clinics are doing.
Right.
And so this idea that they're a threat to us, I mean, when it comes to rabies, for example, there has not been. I mean, you can go to the CDC and you can see that I think that there have been 49 cases of rabies in people since 1995. And of those, 10 were the results of dog bites outside of the United States, and the remainder were traced to other wildlife or origin was unknown.
Hmm.
They were not related to cats at all.
Yeah.
So I think that we have to look, and when it comes to rabies, the rabies experts, again, those that work in the public health field, this is what they've been working on for years, for decades, is that we've done the right thing in the United States. We have had massive amounts of vaccinations for animals, for our not only our domestic animals, but also for wildlife. And there was even, I was at a national public health conference, and the top, the keynote speaker said that rabies is a public health success. It's a public health victory in this country. So we've done very well. I mean, to hear, you know, all these things that are brought up about what's going to be spread by cats and what's going to happen to people and kids, you know, this is just the red herrings.
Right.
They're not true. And you have to kind of, again, if this were true, then I think that we would be hearing about a lot more people, a lot more children, a lot more issues that would be in the not only in the paper, but we'd have to really be educating people about. I mean, you have to have common sense. I mean,
right,
it doesn't mean that we don't have, and that's why there's these programs. People need to be educated that if they see cats, they need to call and get into a Trap, Neuter, Return program.
Yeah.
A lot of people, the other thing that you just mentioned, if I can just touch on this,
sure,
about the veterinarians and about those who want something done that's right, that's sensible and is the right thing. Interestingly enough, twice as many cats in homes, the cats that are in homes right now, twice as many were brought in as strays and taken to veterinarians. We have research to show this in JAVMA that people are doing the right thing, and they're going to their own veterinarian and taking the cat that's on their porch that's stray, after asking everybody in their neighborhood, who does this cat belong to, they're bringing the cat inside, and they're going to their own veterinarian. So people are actually, these residents, these veterinarians, are serving these people. These people are their customers that are actually caring for a lot of stray cats and bringing them in as their house cats, as their companions.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that is really significant. And another thing that I think is really important here, and I know we're just sort of in the last moment or two of our chat here, Becky, but, and again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Becky Robinson, president and co-founder of Valley Cat Allies, in a conversation recorded last Wednesday. But one thing that you do hear a lot, and that I just mentioned in that guys, is the thing about not making a significant reduction in outdoor cat population. Can you just cite, you know, one or two or whatever, you know, number of examples of, again, it doesn't happen overnight, but over time, how even in feral cat colonies, that
how does that work?
Yeah, and that's not, that point isn't necessarily true, really, over time.
Well, it absolutely works, and there's definitive cases. I mean, people just have to know about them.
Yeah.
Let me just give you three examples very quickly.
Yeah.
One is that there was a colony of cats that were discovered by women having lunch along the riverfront in Newburyport, along Merrimack River, and they decided to get organized. They did exactly what you said. They were the accidental activists, and they started carrying out, they organized people, they raised some money, they went to the city, they got this all endorsed, they went to the businesses, and they put a program together. Now, mind you, this is 20 years ago, when this, they were probably the first ones in their region to be doing this.
Yeah.
And they humanely box-trapped all of the cats. There were approximately 300. Many of the kittens were adopted out. They took the rest. They took all of them to be spayed and neutered because, of course, one thing that your listeners ought to know is that there is early age spay neuter now for kittens that are healthy and weigh 2 pounds. If they're 2 months on up, they can be spayed or neutered because a lot of cats get pregnant and have kittens even before what we knew as the six-month mark. And at Merrimack River, after they did everything that they did and they cared for these cats, there are zero cats there now. The last cat, Zorro, died, I think he was 17. He died a couple of years ago, and three years ago. And there's zero cats along the Merrimack River along in Newburyport.
Yeah.
And in Adams Morgan, the very original story that you asked me about, you know, what was my story, there were 54 cats there, and there are none there now.
Yeah.
There are zero.
Right.
And then there are other examples where they're on their way to be zero. And at Stanford University, which is endorsed by the university, a program that was developed in the 90s, the 1,500 cats along this huge, huge campus were all neutered systematically. People helped, volunteers, veterinarians, including the public health officials that endorsed this, the maintenance. And now there's like 200 cats left. And this, again, you have to look at when it went from 1,500 to what it is now.
Yeah, right.
So I could spend a lot more time with you right now, but I, you know, encourage people to come to alleycat.org and sign up for information, look at our website, and we've tracked where this is working and how it's working and how the community is quite satisfied with it.
Yeah. Well, and one last thing, Becky, and then I'll let you go because I've sort of held you well beyond the time, but this is, to me, so interesting and so important. But maybe you could just briefly touch on the monthly webinar that Alleycat Allies offers, because I think that's a great way to sort of build in the conversation we've just had here.
Sure. You can go to alleycat.org, and there's information about our webinars, which is really whether you're involved with cats, whether you feed cats, maybe you're at a rescue group or you work for the city in some form or capacity, and you can sign up. It's free. And the webinar just walks you through pretty much everything that I've touched on. You know, what's a feral? What's the difference between a stray cat and a feral cat? And what is trap near return? How do you actually carry it out? And how would you conduct that? How would you, you know, develop a program? Because obviously the cats are there already. You know, people aren't putting them there. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon to have cats in our communities.
Sure.
I mean, the goal here, and you can find all this out at alleycat.org, the goal is for the public, again, it's organizing and it's getting volunteers involved and being a part, plugging them into a part of a program. Through that webinar, if you go through the webinar and you don't know about a program in your area and you'd like to know about one or about people that know what they're doing, experts in your area, you can sign up to get information from our Feral Friends Network. And that's a national network that identifies programs and groups and people in all parts of the U.S. So thanks for asking about the webinar.
Yeah.
It's free, and about 100 people attend it every time we hold it.
That's great. Well, Becky, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talk Animals. We've been speaking with Becky Robinson, president and co-founder of Alleycat Allies, again, as she's mentioned a few times, but a great, great website with all kinds of resources and help, alleycat.org, and they're also on Facebook. So, Becky, thanks for all your great help and your time today.
Thank you, Duncan, for covering this issue and for your passion. We really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
Okay, have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. I want to do something from Marc Maron, who's not only in the midst of a very exciting career phase with a new book, a new TV series on IFC, new stand-up special, and more, I think. Beyond that, he'll be appearing this week at the Moon Tower Comedy and Oddity Festival in Austin, Texas. Lots going on. This is Marc Maron with an edited version of a piece called Cat Guy on today's Comedy Corner. I'm talking in.
With my cats, I asked them questions they couldn't possibly answer. They can't answer any questions. They're cats. It doesn't stop me from engaging them. I've had moments with Monkey, who was sitting in his place on the table, and I've looked him in the eye and said, I don't know what to do. Should I break up with her? I don't know what to do. And Monkey just sits there like a cat. And I say, what does that even mean? And wait. LaFonda has been on my stomach. Laugh out loud. Don't laugh into the gloves. It's making a weird sound. We're recording a CD. The laughter has to be somewhat level. And I think when you were laughing into your gloves, it made a very weird noise. I think freaked out a lot of people right up here. It literally sounded like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Like I thought you were making an animal noise in response to the cat, which was not the appropriate animal noise. And I struggled in that moment, which distracted me from the joke, to understand the meaning of the vague animal-like noise you were making, because I thought perhaps there was something to mine there. And then when I put my hand over the light, you were just laughing in your gloves. There's no time for shame, man. Fonda on my stomach, making muffins, doing that cat thing. It's cute, right? It's cute. It's what you want cats to do. In that moment, I said, are you saying I'm off of me? And I worry about my cats, which is really more embarrassing than having cats as a man. Actively worrying about your cat. Like, a monkey goes in and outside. He goes outside and inside. He's an indoor-outdoor cat. I love the cat, but, you know, and look, honestly, folks, I don't know if I've expressed this before clearly. I'm not a cat guy, okay? I'm a my cat guy. I don't give a... If I go to your house, I'll pretend to out of politeness. I'll be like, oh, but secretly I'll be thinking, what a sad, fat, ugly, dumb cat you have. Lazy, it's not even moving. Oh my God, that cat is days away from hanging itself from its scratching post. Look at it, just a pathetic hostage to your pain and needs. Trapped in an apartment. My cat's an indoor-outdoor cat. It's a vital, wild animal. Your cat can't even muster up the gumption to play with what's left of that fake mouse you got it. It's pathetic. You should put that cat down out of, you know, sympathy. Your cat is days away of dying from ennui. My cats are amazing. But I worry about him. You know, Monkey goes inside and outside. He could get eaten by coyotes. He could. I have to live with that. Because I don't want to deny him that essential wild nature that he has in his heart. But I worry. I think, like, what if he gets eaten by coyotes? And then I rationalize. I say things to myself like, that's a pretty noble way to go out. As an animal in a primal bloody struggle for survival. An animal in a primal bloody struggle for survival with another beast. Primal bloody struggle for survival with another beast. But I love Monkey. So that doesn't work. One time I was worrying about Monkey and I actually said, Mark, there are parents that have children fighting in Afghanistan. And I thought, that would be horrible to have a cat in Afghanistan. In a poorly armored carrying case with no kitty flak jacket and an unending jacket and an unending war with an unclear... In an unending war with an unclear agenda. Unending war with an unclear agenda. That would... With an unclear agenda. That would... That would be horrible.
All right.
That would be horrible.
I think we have a little CD issue at the tail end there. That was Marc Maron with an edited version of a piece called Cat Guy, taken from his album This Has to Be Funny, recorded certainly well before his beloved cat Boomer went missing, which he regular listeners to his fantastic podcast WTF are all too familiar with, including that there were T-shirts made up with Boomer Lives on there. Let's hope that's true, and let's hope that Boomer returns to the Cat Ranch there, where Mark does those podcasts. I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will win a fabulous, brand new Talking Animals T-shirt. Highly coveted item. So we'll do that in a few minutes here by email today versus by phone, the way we normally do on Talking Animals. Right now, though, it's time for animal news and announcements. And saw this, and I just thought any of us that have had animals for any length of time probably know someone or maybe are someone who could make good use of Gulfside Regional Hospice specifically as a pet loss support group that meets every other week. That began last week, but just wanted to call your attention to it. It's at Gulfside's Lutz Thrift Shop, located at 1930 Lando Lakes Boulevard in the Harbor Village Shopping Plaza. And that happens from 2 to 3 p.m. Among others coming up are May 10th, May 14th, June 7th, and June 21st. And there's a quote here from Linda Ward, Gulfside's president and CEO. Gulfside Regional Hospice understands that the loss of a pet can sometimes be just as hard as the loss of a loved one. At the group, participants will get to share their feelings with others going through the same thing, as well as receive support from a trained bereavement counselor. For more information about the support group, call Debbie LeBeouf at 727-457-7722. That's 727-457-7722. And I mentioned this last week on the show for the premiere, but it certainly, well, again, with my elephant bias, I guess, always worth mentioning another time, but by which I'm referring to this new documentary, An Apology to Elephants, affiliated with HBO's Documentary Films Wing. Looks really, really well done. It's narrated by Lily Tomlin. I think that narration is written by her partner, Jane Wagner, and the film is directed by Emmy winner Amy Schatz. It just looks like first class kind of all the way. You know, already premiered Monday night, the 22nd. But there are other playdates coming up on HBO, April 25th, the 27th, and so on, depending on HBO Network. And if you don't have it, like I said last week, invite yourself over to a friend's house who does have it. You got to see this, probably. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm just guessing. All right, so let's see what else is coming up here more locally. There's the Purina Pro Plan Incredible Dog Challenge, scheduled for Saturday, May 4th at Spa Beach Park, 615 2nd Avenue Northeast in St. Petersburg, on the 4th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Information you can get by calling 704-644-6561. Athletic dogs from around the country will make their way to Spa Beach Park to compete in the Purina Pro Plan Incredible Dog Challenge Eastern Regional. This premier canine sporting event features dogs competing in a variety of Olympic-style events, including high-flying disc routines, head-to-head weave pole racing, large and small dog agility courses, Jack Russell hurdle racing, and the crowd favorite dog diving, where dogs take a running leap off a 40-foot dock into a 19,000-gallon pool of water. So, local dogs have the opportunity to qualify on Friday, March 3rd for some of these events. To learn more, visit BarkNetwork.com. That's BarkNetwork.com. And also looking ahead a little bit, Pet Pal Animal Shelter, No Kill Shelter, is holding its largest fundraiser of the year, Puppy Love, on May 11th at the Hilton Bayfront in St. Pete. Pet Pal Animal Shelter has been rescuing dogs and cats who are at risk of being euthanized since 2005 and giving them a second chance at a new life in their forever home. The 11th annual Puppy Love evening includes dinner, silent auction, raffles and prizes, music provided by Decibel Nation, throughout the evening, and dinner serenade by jazz singer Deborah Lee. All proceeds raised will directly benefit Pet Pal Animal Shelter and our Emergency Medical Fund. Find out more about the fundraiser by going to petpalanimalshelter.com, or you can call 727-328-7738. And Duncan Strauss, you are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win. And there will be a prize, a brand spanking cool new Talking Animals t-shirt that we introduced for the first time in our last fund drive. And people seem to like it. It's a pretty cool shirt. So in this case, we're going to do that to the first person who emails. No phone calls today. First person who emails talkinganimals at WMNF.org with the correct title of this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
As I did walk by hams that fit.
In case you email talkinganimals at WMNF.org. And the first person, the first with the correct answer, naming that animal tune, will win a fabulous new Talking Animals t-shirt. So we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, May 1st, Mayday, Mayday, with another edition of Talking Animals. I hope you'll join us for that. Strauss, thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show with an animal song. Cover division from the piano piece we're hearing now into this. This is Brad Mehldau with an animal song. His conversion of Blackbird, taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Thanks so much for listening. Speak to you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.